I'm Carol Hills, and you're with The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH in Boston. On this Thanksgiving Day, we'd like to play you a story that we first aired this past summer. The World's Patrick Cox is our reporter.
Hey, Carol.
Hey, Patrick.
Let me start by playing you something.
The next station is Westminster. Change.
So, as you can hear, I was in London. I was with my daughter, and we were doing, you know, the usual London stuff, going to touristy places. And along the way, we were testing out this app. It's called Over There.
T-bar, 69 feet.
Over there. So what does it do?
It's kind of like a speaking GPS or speaking Google Maps, and it's designed for blind people to orient themselves. So you point your phone in any direction, and the app just starts listing off places.
Chelsea Football Club Stadium, 200 feet. Chelsea
I get the idea. Your favorite soccer team. And this app called Over There tells you the places that are tagged on digital maps, and it's reading them out loud to you?
That's right. And there's all kinds of audio nuances that further help to orient you. Like, the tag place sounds clear when you point directly at it, but it's a little more staticky if you veer away from it a bit. It's one of the many ways in which digital designers are trying to keep blind people abreast of technological advancement. And here's the interesting thing. You can use this app even if you have absolutely no literacy in Braille.
Because, of course, the app is speaking to you.
Right.
So Braille, you mentioned it, it's the writing system for the blind. But this all begs the question, how much do blind people actually need Braille these days?
Yeah, I had the same question. And I knew if I wanted to get a handle on whether or not Braille is vital today and how vital it may be in the future, I needed to know how it came into being, courtesy of that young Frenchman Louis Braille, how it came into being in the first place.
It has dots.
Embossed on signs, on paper. Cute dots.
We're going to draw them on the board. There's dots.
This is Sherry Wells Jensen, and she's doing her impression of how not to teach Braille and its history. Sherry's a linguistics professor at Bowling Green State University in Ohio. And blind Braille readers, they have to put up with a lot of bad Braille history, usually told by sighted people. What about before there were dots, though? Before there was Braille?
Pretty much blind people weren't going to school at all. The idea of literacy just wasn't even on the radar. The only thing that blind people could read were things that other people wrote for them. So that you had no note-taking, no journaling, no recording your great thoughts.
So literally, if you wanted to write something back, you would have to get a sighted person to write it down for you.
Right. You'd have to get them to be the scribe, and after they'd written it, then they would have to decide to go ahead and emboss that for you. So writing anything down for yourself was probably a 2 or 3 step process.
So Louis Braille was born in 1809. He was actually born sighted and then became blinded in an accident in his early childhood. He went to a school for the blind in Paris, and that is where he learned his ABCs with the help of those clunky embossed letters. So what was it about him that made him reject his lot in life and seek something more? Figuring this question out isn't that straightforward.
It's really hard to find sort of a realistic biography of Louis Braille because, you know, you read some of these biographies and he's just descended from angels and he was this amazing, special, I don't know. A lot of them are really awfully sappy, so it's hard to get a handle on who the fellow was, really. But there was something about his parents, I think. There was something about the way he was raised. Their, I don't know if you would say insistence or willingness to just let him bang around the house and figure things out and come and go as he wanted to. And it seemed to me that they did not spend a lot of time trying to control his motions. A lot of times, blind kids are raised with a lot of don't touch, sit still, be careful. And I think he was gifted with this kind of freedom to fall down stairs and climb trees and run around and just be a kid. And I think that makes such a crucial difference at a young age for kids.
Okay, so here's this fearless boy with all of this built-in freedom. And France, at the time, it was a huge power politically, intellectually, and especially militarily. Napoleon Bonaparte, he'd been waging war all over Europe. And it was a French battlefield innovation that gave Louis Braille, the school kid, his idea.
people were always coming to the school apparently with the latest wacky new thing that was going to give blind people literacy. And one of the things that came through was a system of night writing, it was called, that they were using for military purposes, because you don't want to light your lantern in the middle of the night on the front line to read it, right? Because, boom, there you are.
It served a need, night writing, and it used code. Lines and dashes represented sounds. It was fast to read and handy under the fingertips. And that was all the inspiration that 15-year-old Louis Braille needed. Of course, he also needed to improve this writing system, to compress it.
So the blind people themselves thought, this is genius. We love this. Suddenly we're reading and writing on our own. We're not waiting for a sighted person to do X, Y, Z for us. We can write down our own stuff. We can be rotten little 14-year-old boys and pass notes in class, right? We can do all this. We can do what we want to do. So the blind people loved it. The sighted people running the school hated it. They didn't like it partly because they didn't learn it. And so they didn't know what the kids were writing, and that's trouble. That's kids taking power away from the teachers. That's people assuming their own agency and becoming themselves. The sighted administrators of the school, they could have learned it. Anyone can learn Braille, just go ahead. But they didn't want to. And at one point, they actually went through the school, found all the kids' notes in Braille, found all the books that they had transcribed in Braille, hauled them out into the courtyard of the school, and they had themselves a book burning. Yeah, Braille book burning. You can feel them going, no, 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 no. Back that off. Back that off. You're not taking this power from us. You belong to us, you blind people. You are our philanthropy. We get a lot of prestige from, you know, taking care of you all. And your role is to sit quietly and do what we tell you to do, not invent a writing system and claim literacy and start doing your own thing.
Wow, that's staggering. So how on earth did he manage to sort of convince officialdom that this was a good thing?
I think, you know, like all power structures, there's some people who are in it to feed their egos and to have the power. But then there were also educators of blind people at the time who really were in it for blind people, who really understood that these are people with human rights and I'm going to use my power for good. So eventually, the sighted people, on behalf of blind people, convinced each other that, yeah, we should go ahead and do this thing.
It took a few more years, but Braille became established in France, and then it spread to other countries. Not always with ease. In the US, conflicting writing systems held it back for decades, and even after that was settled, many American books for children used an older form of Braille. It wasn't really until the 1950s that everyone was on the same page. So several generations of blind Americans really lost out there. I'm sure that all the publishing houses and directors of schools for the blind thought they were doing the right thing. But they weren't. They were being stubborn. Sherry Wells Jensen was luckier. She was born after all of this. Not only that, she had great family support.
My mother learned to read Braille before I did because she figured I was going to have to read it, so she might as well figure it out too. So I had the advantage of, you know, my mom could write me a letter when I went to camp.
As a kid, she used to wait on summer mornings for the mail guy to come.
He'd pull into the driveway and toot his horn, and that meant he had a book for me. He had a book for me, whatever it was going to be, you know, from the lending library. And I'd go tearing down the stairs and fling myself down the front porch steps and crash into his car and say, give it to me, give it to me. And it was this big moment that there was going to be a book. And you bet that I read every word of that book. Every word. I didn't skip a page because it was the book that there was to read for that week. But now if I want something, anything that's online, I can read in Braille. And that's amazing to me. Like I can get a book and go, I don't want to finish this. It's sort of a weird kind of freedom to be able to skip things. To know that there's another book that you can just change to if you don't like what you're reading. I can even start in the middle if I want to. But that's not what most kids get. So they get a little bit of Braille during the day, whatever is Brailled for them. They come home to a largely Brailleless environment, where sighted kids, there's just reading everywhere. Probably if you look around you right now, there's all kinds of words.
Yeah.
There's words on signs, words on just books. I don't know. I don't even know.
You're right. Yeah, it's everywhere.
I think the nearest Braille to me right now is probably out in the hallway. There might be a number on the door. And that's the only thing I can read. I'm betting it's the only thing I can read in this whole building are those numbers on the doors. Maybe it says exit. Maybe it says restroom on the restroom. But there's this absence of the written word that little kids and adults too, but crucially that little kids experience when they're Braille readers. Whereas you are bombarded with print everywhere. There's words, words, words. And that has a marvelous beneficial effect for little kids learning to read.
Yeah, of course. And for adults, once they left school, continuing to be fully literate.
Right, and it's so easy. Like, you want to read something, there's a whole library full of hundreds of thousands of different books just sitting there on the shelf, and you don't even have to have a plan. You don't even have to know what you want. You can just walk up and say, oh, look, there's a blue one. I'll pick up that. It's got words in it. And the unconscious ease of words everywhere is something that you don't experience if you're a Braille reader.
Patrick, after hearing that, I'm wondering how many Braille readers and writers are out there?
Nobody knows, Carol. I mean, attempts to count them have been made many times, but it's really hard. I mean, what is fluency? Do you count people who learned Braille as children no longer use it that much? Some people do, some people don't. So the counts are all over the place. But there is this anxiety among Braille supporters that the numbers may be down compared to a couple of decades ago. They just don't know for sure.
How does Braille keep from becoming outdated? I mean, how does it deal with internet speak and hashtags, the @, all caps, all that kind of stuff?
Well, they have modernized the system. There's a new standard now. It's called Unified English Braille. This addresses a bunch of these issues. But there's also technology, which means that there are new and easier ways to read and write. Many blind people read and write their emails, for example, by using text-to-speech technology.
And, of course, you can talk to your smartphone, whether you're blind or not, and it'll talk back to you. And presumably, there are quite a few apps like that when you tried out in London.
Yeah, I met the guy who designed the interface for that app. His name is Joshua Mealy. He runs a lab at the Smith Cadwell Eye Research Institute in San Francisco. He invents stuff that makes it easier for blind people to access information.
And while I am a huge Braille advocate, I use Braille every day myself. Braille is not the one solution to our information accessibility challenges.
So I guess the message is Braille has a role to play, but maybe not quite the central role that it did in the past.
Yeah. Let's throw a curveball here, though. Josh Mealy, he thinks that we also may be on the cusp of a Braille renaissance because of technology. So electronic Braille readers, which are these massive, clunky, expensive things that have actually been around for decades, there are new iterations of those readers that are being made now out of tiny components. All of that stuff is much smaller.
And much cheaper and much more reliable. And so now we can come back to that idea and say, hey, wait a second. That's actually going to work now that a servo motor is like the size of the head of a pin rather than the size of a mason jar. It's really helpful to know not only, you know, what's coming, but what's been tried and why didn't it work.
So I guess what goes around comes around. I'm wondering what Louis Braille would have made of all this. I mean, he was such an innovator. I mean, technology would have excited him.
Yes, that is very much what the person who told me about him thinks, Sherry Wells Jensen of Bowling Green State University. She's all about using technology too. But Braille, reading and writing it every day, that is still her main form of communication, her most cherished. What else would you use, she says, for your personal writing, your diary entries?
Your love letters. Can you imagine? I have to do an audio love letter? Uh-uh. No. There are things that we want to communicate that we really want to write down. And having the freedom to choose to do that when you want to, literacy is a human right. It just is.
I'm gonna love you like no one's loved you, come rain or come shine.
Patrick, did you learn any Braille while reporting this story?
I'm afraid I didn't. Well, I did learn a couple of letters from a staff member at the Andrew High School Braille and Talking Book Library in New York. We did a live show there. But I'm afraid I can't do something like Happy Thanksgiving in Braille.
Well, anyway, thank you, Patrick, and Happy Thanksgiving.
You too, Carol.
I guess when you met me, it was just a...